Hey folks, I'm here to do a little housekeeping for you, let you know what the schedule is, because we just are coming off of a really fun, amazing live show in LA. It was just an absolute blast. And I have to tell you, I don't want to rub it in, but Platinum Night with Andrew cooking for us was even better than I could have imagined. It was so fun. So make sure to try to make it next time. And VIP was fun. It all was great. Anyway, this is all to say that if you are a non-patron, what you're going to be hearing today is the Q&A section of that live show. It was just about an hour in itself, and we wanted to get that out first, you know, because I think it was probably the most timely thing. You know, people had questions about the news and stuff like that. I think it'll be really good. I hope you enjoy it. I want to also say, if you're a patron, we're going to go ahead and give you access to the entire live show right now. So if you're a patron at patreon.com/law, I hope that means you have the Patreon feed in your podcatcher. Make sure you do. And so you should be hearing this appended to the entire live show. Now, that does mean we're trying to find the best way to do this. That does mean that in the future, there's going to be a few things that you've already heard because we're going to use some of the live show content for later Tuesday episodes. But our plan is to try to mix in some bonus patron-only content to sort of make up for that so that you're still getting fresh new stuff each week. So that's our plan. There was so much. Carrie and Matthew were amazing. I can't wait till you all get to hear that. It was a lot of fun. Thanks to everyone who came, and I hope you enjoy this. With that said, for normies, let's get on over to the Q&A, and keep in mind there's also still the patron thanks and the T3BE answer from last week. That'll be at the end of the show. For patrons, enjoy the entire 2+ hour live show. Hope you enjoy it.
The jury's like, oh snap, a twist. Like, they love twists. Any great trial has a twist.
I suggest that we give them 10 years in Leavenworth or 11 years in Twelveworth.
I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll take 5 and 10 in Woolworth.
Well, it was like this, Mr. Court.
I press the judge as your honor.
Well, it was like this, my honor.
Your honor, not my honor.
Why? Don't you like him?
You're meant to come down here and defend me against these characters, and the only one I've got on my side is the blood-sucking lawyer.
Welcome to Opening Arguments, the podcast that pairs an inquisitive interviewer with a real-life lawyer. This podcast is sponsored by the law offices of P. Andrew Torres, LLC, for entertainment purposes, is not intended as legal advice, and does not form an attorney-client relationship. Don't take legal advice from a podcast.
Okay. All right. Anyone have a question for Andrew? Here we go. Somebody here? No? You're pointing? Oh, duh. I forget every time. Yeah, what's your question? Obligatory question one from Teresa Gomez.
This is... Andrew had asked on Twitter to share his Gene Scalia story.
Oh, yeah. So
cheating. So you use someone else's question? Teresa. I want a real Teresa question. I'm just kidding. Okay, what is the question? Gene Scalia?
Yeah, Gene Scalia. So Eugene Scalia, son of the delightfully departed former Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, works for, I think he's still there, but when I encountered him, he worked for a big firm, a Covington-style firm called Gibson, Dunn & Crutcher in downtown Washington, D.C. And Gibson Dunn represented the defendant in one of the few plaintiff's cases that I did while I was at a big firm. And this was, I've told a little bit of the story before. This is one of the worst fact pieces that I've ever had in a case. So this was a guy who was an accountant for a multinational billion-dollar accounting firm, right? And they transferred him to the Philippines over his objections, and he was kidnapped off the street in the Philippines, which is apparently happens to
Thursday.
Yeah, seriously. Apparently that happens a lot. And then, so that's real bad. And then the firm decided that they were going to intervene in the hostage negotiations, right? The kidnappers were like, sent a letter to my client's family and said, hey, we want you to pay $100,000, which, look, was a lot. But he was like, yeah, right? His wife was like, yeah, well, we'll pay that tomorrow. Like, we'll borrow money. We'll do it, right? And the firm was like, we got trained hostage negotiators here, so we're not going to, no, don't pay
this
the money.
This is exactly from Die Hard, right?
Yeah.
Hans, Bobby.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. Yeah, yeah. They sent, I got this. They sent in, what was the guy?
Yeah, what's that guy's name?
Not remember. Elliot, but it was, anyway. Oh, so,
no, it might be that. Yeah. Anyone know? We should bring one Die Hard specialist to every show.
Right.
Note, Brian, write that down for me.
Anyway, so the firm went in and lowballed and was like, well, we'll pay you $20,000. And so in response, what the kidnappers did was, this was described in the complaint as cut off a portion of his ear. So I want you to think about what you would think about for that. And I watched the video that they sent. They, again, movie-like, right? They sent the box with half of his ear and this videotape to his family. And the video
comes
on.
They said, we'll go to 30,000.
The video came on, and he is bound, and he has a gag shoved into his mouth, and he's screaming, right? And it's this muffled, and then the kidnapper comes over with black-handled kitchen shears, right? Goes in the middle, halfway in the middle of his ear, and as, I'm sorry, I should have done it.
I don't really need this in my life.
Yeah, it's this is really bad. As they cut through, all of a sudden, like, I had to throw off the headphones because the screaming went, yeah, it was deafening.
So don't, if I'm ever kidnapped, can you just not lowball?
Yeah, dude, you pay the goddamn money.
Yeah.
Don't take kidnapping advice from a podcast. Anyway, and so our entire case was basically like that. We're going to play that to a jury, and the jury.
So sorry, who's suing? So somebody's suing the idiots. Who,
so we,
that guy,
right? My client, right, sued the accounting firm that interfered in the kidnapping negotiations.
And yes, they should have.
And of course they should have. And the accounting firm hired Gibson, Dunn & Crutcher, and they tied us up for 4 years with all sorts of bullshit, wow. Procedural. Like, their first thing was, well, this should obviously come under workers' compensation, right? Which was like, yeah, well, which was, we'll pay for one a medical visit, right? They were going to, like, pay, like, $213.
But
to,
we're
like,
docking his vacation days for while he was kidnapped.
And so the ultimately, like, I dealt with the Gibson Dunn lawyers, who, again, right, are, first-rate Covington-style, like, top-of-their-class Ivy League universities. And it was a pleasure to, kick their ass at every stage. When we had the appeal before the D.C. Circuit on the workers' comp, all of a sudden, Gene Scalia added his name to the top of the pleadings. He was a partner at Gibson Dunn at the time and took over the oral argument. And his oral argument was essentially like, well, Your Honor, like, I'm Gene Scalia. Like, my dad's on the Supreme Court. And
my dad said I should win this case, so please do that,
it
Judge,
was 100%,
Your Honor.
I mean, I'm not kidding. It was 100%, like,
or he'll beat you up.
Sent in to try and convince the panel, like, you don't want my daddy to overrule you. We won 3-0 in the D.C. Circuit.
All right.
So, Gene Scalia, talentless f***ing hack, nepotism, and so, of course, he's been nominated by Donald Trump to the federal bench.
Oh, wow. Let's have a less murdery question. Anybody? Here we go. Let's go. Hey, all right.
Do you guys just jump into recording when you guys start your show, or do you guys do a pre-show between each other, and what's that like?
No, we pretty much just jump in. I mean, we usually chat. I usually complain about something, and Andrew sits there and listens to sympathetically because I've something broke or some audio piece of shit is not working, and I'm mad. And then he's like, "Okay, no, that's I'm really sorry about that. Anyway, let's go." And then we go. That's pretty much.
We do fill out the whiteboard, and so what I'll do is put on the whiteboard, you know, like this is the story for the A segment, the B segment, the C segment. As Thomas has alluded to in recent weeks, like the B segment will be like, it's Yodel Mountain, and then I'll have like 11 numbered items on the list. But we jump in that way. Except for Friday's show, the one that aired today, which we recorded on Wednesday, where Thomas messaged me like 12 minutes beforehand, and he was like,
"No, I gave you right. 12. I thought I gave you warning, and then I realized that I had the wrong date in my calendar, and we were recording that day. I thought we were recording the next day. My fault. You're right. Sorry."
And he's like, "How the f***ing PG&E just shut off power for 5 million people?
Like, I'm
going to rant about
I'm
this
going
for half an
to
hour.
Talk about this." Like, and then I was like, "Can you law it or something? Like, give me some law for it." Yeah, sometimes that happens. I think I need to move to like across around the world once and then also more in a time zone so that I'm like 34 hours ahead of you. Because the problem is the West Coast, I mean, we all know we're all here. And some of you probably live around here. Big Dodgers fans and stuff, like, it's hard because he's up already. I'm sure you're up earlier than I am because you're a lawyer and you still do law talking guy stuff. And that's 3 hours ahead of us. So I wake up and the whole world of news has already happened. So I usually am just trying to play catch up and then we record. Like, it's just the coast, man. This West Coast, it's killing me. But yeah, all right, next question. Let's go over. One of our game players of the game.
Sorry for failing that, by the way.
Sorry, I still love you.
Whether it's a Lot Awful movie or just a general deep dive topic, are there any movies or topics that you vehemently disagree on covering? And if so, why?
Like him and I disagree with each other on covering? Or oh. Well, Andrew kept wanting to do really fucking amazing comedy movies for Lot Awful movies. And I was like, I can't make jokes about a perfect movie. I'll just be like, yeah, that's funny. Cool. They're great. Ha ha. And so that was several arguments early on, and then I think Andrew maybe realized I was kind of right on that one, maybe a little bit, just
no,
a little bit.
I don't recall ever taking that side, but that's fine.
Yeah. You wanted to do My Cousin Vinny forever. It's too
I've
good.
I've always been against doing My Cousin Vinny
that's
for
nuts.
Precisely
this
that reason.
I'm going right, to subpoena
we have
you
this,
for
we
documents.
Have this argument.
I'm going
this
to
is...
subpoena you. Yeah. Turn over the documents. What did you know and when did you know it about... My Cousin Vinny. What do you think about this question?
There's one that I feel like we could talk about.
I'm probably not thinking of what you're talking
about.
Yeah, go ahead.
So there is, and really this is just, I think we both want to do this, but there's no tasteful way to do it. There is an unbelievably awful, socially disgusting movie from 1986, wow. Called Soul Man. I don't know if you've ever... Yeah, and it is C. Thomas Howell at the height of C. Thomas Howelldom in blackface.
We all know who that is, guys, right?
Yes, you
C.
do. Thomas Everybody Th- knows who C.
Who
Thomas Howell
is. The fuck that is? Who's anyway. C. Thomas Howell?
He was associated with the Brat Pack. But anyway...
yeah, sorry. 33, I don't know.
It's C. Thomas Howell in blackface playing a white guy in blackface who gets into Harvard on affirmative action. So it is, yeah, it's so it's got the Harvard thing, it's got horrible law, it's got a terribly regressive social message because affirmative action doesn't work that way, you assholes, right? And like, I really, really want to rip this movie a new one. And I think you know why.
It's just
probably
yeah.
like, yeah, it would be super uncomfortable to do this. So
can I say one thing? Unfortunately, we have one person here who knew me back when I was a conservative and an asshole. Now I'm still an asshole. I'm just not a conservative. But yeah, I wish somebody in college and in high school, when I thought I was all against affirmative action because it was unfair to white people, I wish someone had just taken me and done the thing in movies where like you slap the woman who's like trying to talk and then she realizes like, oh, it's the 30s and I shouldn't talk. You're right. Or whatever. And they'd done that to me and been like, hey, dummy, more white people get into Harvard based on their parents than all of the affirmative action slots that are ever available. You fucking idiot. I wish someone had done that, and I'd be like, I didn't know that because white people don't know that because we are ignorant about these things oftentimes. That is absolutely true. The number of just legacy admissions far outnumbers the total number of black people at Harvard.
Yep.
The total number. Forget like they're all affirmative action, which they're not. That's a fact. And I didn't know that because I was ignorant and just thought of it now because we talked about some stupid blackface movie that we're not going to do. So if anybody has a time machine, please go do the thing I just said with the slapping in circa 2003 or whatever, four. All right, next question. Straight ahead here, and then we'll get to the sides next. Here, I'm going to throw the mic at you now.
Do these all need to be practical questions? This seems to be the theme. Okay, all right.
The more impractical, the better for the motto of the show, you know.
I'm just curious, you know, with the whole whistleblower thing that, yeah, I feel like, you know, it happened like 3 years ago. But, you know, the whistleblower brought it up to an IG, right? Excuse me if I forget all the names of people.
I see IG.
Yeah, and then that went to someone else, right, who had to hand over papers to Congress, and it took, he waited more than 7 days or whatever the thing, the time limit was.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't like a police officer just arrest him for breaking the law? like why, you know, like if we can like find no reason to arrest like black people for whatever reason, like why can't this guy get arrested?
I totally appreciate the spirit of that one. And
yeah,
you're going to answer it, but I also think it goes to the theme we've talked about, which is, I mean, A, you're going to have some lawyer answer of like, well, it's fine to get a Sterling word crunch wrap and then they'll do whatever, and it's fine. But part of it is that if a black person commits a crime, we want to throw him in jail. If a politician commits a crime, we're like, well, but did he really mean to crime, though? Like, maybe if we let him crime for like a week and then he uncrimes, then it's fine, right? Is that an accurate description of how the system works?
That's not an inaccurate description of how the system works. In this case, however, and I think I said this on the episode of the show so what happened under the International Whistleblower Protection Act is the whistleblower filed his complaint. It goes to the Inspector General, the International Community Inspector General, who was the person who looked at it and said, "Holy shit." And does the investigation, and that person has a set period of time. I'm not looking at the statute, so I don't want to get the numbers wrong, but that person has a set period of time, which I believe is 14 days, to make a determination as to whether that complaint is serious and credible. He did so. At that point, the statute then uses the words must and shall, right? Says that the ICIG shall turn the complaint over to the Director for National Intelligence, and then the Director of National Intelligence must forward that complaint to the House of Congress to whom it is directed.
Case closed.
Yes, it is as case closed as the law can be. And then it says, by the way, that the DNI can append comments, right? Can say, okay, this came to my desk. I'm forwarding it to you because the law says I have to.
LOL, our president's the worst, right? Like, there's those kind of comments. A few emojis in the complaint. Right. Like, oh, this guy, how do we elect him? All right. Anyway, here's your whistleblower component.
But does not say that the acting DNI, and there is no Director of National Intelligence, because of course there isn't. There is like 15 major cabinet level positions are vacant right now and are filled with people that have never been confirmed by Congress, by the Senate. So that's delightful. The Director of National Intelligence was, I'm blanking on the name, he was an Indiana senator. Yes.
I think it's Senator Blevins, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it was Dan Coats, right? And a long-standing establishment guy, pretty hawkish, you know, would be no fan of the show. But again, not a howler monkey, not a crazy person, somebody, you know, respected. Coats resigned like a month before, and so the acting DNI was literally on the job for like a week. And I don't know. I said this on the episode. I'm getting to the answer of your question. I really don't know. And so what he did, he should not have. What he did was receive the complaint and went to Bill Barr and said, what do I do?
Yeah, and his excuses were all, you know, he said, like, well, this is unprecedented.
His excuses, it's my first day, right? Like, it was that episode.
Well, no, it was also,
Simpsons.
We've never had one of these about the president, so I didn't know, which I think you pointed out was kind of nonsense in the episode.
It is, but I do kind of understand when you're the deputy guy, and it's like your first day in the chair, all of a sudden it's like, oh, by the way, like the most monumentous decision you will ever make in your life.
Hey, new guy, the country's falling to pieces. Yeah. Deal with it real quick. Yeah. First day on the job.
Right. So I don't know. So all of that is a long-winded way of saying I don't know if acting D.N.I. McGuire really intended to commit a crime and cover stuff up here. If you want to pick, why isn't this guy arrested, like Corey Lewandowski, that'd be a real good one to pick, right? Like, that guy should be arrested. To show up, and I'm 100% serious, right? Like, to show up and testify before Congress and basically, like, kick your feet up and eat an apple in the testimony, like, that was below and beneath the call of duty.
Take arresting advice from this podcast, seriously. Please, somebody. Let's go over to this side of the room. Here we go. All right. Opening Arguments is brought to you by Hims, a wellness brand for men. You've heard us talking about Hims and how they're helping guys look their best. If you haven't yet, it is time to see what they're all about. Here's the problem. 66% of men start to lose their hair by age 35. Once you've noticed thinning hair, it can be too late. So, is that hairline slowly starting to move backwards? Got a bald spot yet? The best way to prevent hair loss is to do something about it while you still have some. It's time to get a handle on those precious locks. I ask you, do you want a bald spot to pop up or your hairline to recede, or do you want to do something about it first? And here's the thing. Guys turn to weird solutions or do nothing when they can turn to medicine and science. We're fans of medicine and science here on this show. 4hims.com is your one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, and sexual wellness for men. Hims is helping guys be the best versions of themselves with licensed physicians and FDA-approved products that help treat hair loss. These are not snake oil pills or gas station counter supplements. These are prescription solutions backed by science. Hims was created by a guy who knows that some men's health conversations are easier online than in person. I, for one, hate when I have to go into the doctor and I got like an embarrassing thing I want to talk about. And then I got to tell the nurse, I got to write it down. Then I got to tell the nurse. And she writes it down for some reason. And then the doctor's got to read that and again, and then I have to say it again for a third time. Skip all that with Hims. 4Hims connects you to real doctors online, which could save you hours. And it's completely confidential and discreet. You answer a few quick questions, a doctor will review, and if they determine it's right for you, they can prescribe you medication to treat hair loss that is shipped directly to your door. Get the hair loss treatment everyone is talking about. Order now. Our listeners can get started with the Hims Complete Hair Kit for just $5 today, right now, while supplies last and subject to doctor's approval. See website for full details and safety information. This could cost hundreds if you went to the doctor or a pharmacy somewhere else. Go to 4hims.com/OA. That's FORHIMS.com/OA. 4hims.com/OA.
After it became known that Rudy Giuliani was under investigation, his defense was, I couldn't have broken these laws because I was acting on behalf of the president as his lawyer. Is that a plausible defense?
Ah, the Eli Bosnick defense. we could change the tagline. Lydia's here. I could get her to come up and say, don't take legal advice from Rudy Giuliani. that would be good, too. Obviously, that's insane, right? Like, we've talked about this before, that having, like, Trump seriously seems to have this idea that, like, if you have a lawyer in the room, that's like a magic thing that makes everything go away. And as somebody who's 73 years old and has committed a lot of crimes, he ought to know that that's not the case. But I want to take a look. So the answer to that, I mean, obviously, like, that's ridiculous. But I want to point out something that is in the D.C. Circuit opinion that was released today, and it's been in a couple of other kind of recent decisions in connection with Donald Trump, and that is courts putting into their discussion, hey, we want to flag for you that the White House is asserting executive privilege, and we're not sure that executive privilege attaches when it is the president's personal lawyer acting in a personal capacity rather than in the capacity of the office. We don't have to resolve that question here because, by the way, your privilege claim is stupid. And that's basically, by the way, what the D.C. Circuit said today.
But I think the question is slightly different, right? Yeah. Because the question is not necessarily privilege. It's also like Rudy's is now, we just got the alert like last night or whatever. Yeah. Like he's now being investigated, and you're saying, I think, that his excuse is going to be, well, the president told me to do that, which is just fucking nonsense, right?
And that's
it's almost like they require lawyers to know the law.
Well, and so maybe I elided over this part. I should say it very clearly. The argument that Rudy Giuliani is immunized because he was acting on behalf of the president would require a couple of things. One of the predicates that it would require is a notion of absolute executive immunity, which is what I was sort of getting into there. And that is the idea that, like, when the president does it, it's not illegal. And courts are super clear that that's not a thing.
Didn't we move on from that after the Frost-Nixon interview? Yeah. That everybody was like, wait, that's stupid. And we're all like, yes. And then now Republicans are like, no, we missed that.
Yeah. And by the way, part of the... So there's no specific Supreme Court case that says that there's no... that has as its holding that there is no claim of absolute executive privilege. But... there are lots of cases that strongly suggest that. And by the way, a bunch of these came about because of the impeachment of Bill Clinton, right? So Clinton versus Jones stands for the proposition that a president does have to respond to a civil lawsuit filed against him even while he's in office. And if you think about that, right, like Clinton's argument in that case was, hey, look, I'm the president. I'm real busy, and unlike this president, Bill Clinton was actually busy some of the time, and it would be detrimental to the conduct of the presidency of the United States if I've got to prepare for a deposition. So what you should do is just state. Even Clinton wasn't saying like, "Ha ha, I'm the president, you can't sue me." He was saying you should stay this litigation until I'm no longer president, and then I'll sit for the deposition. And the Supreme Court said, "No, you know what? Like, I'm sorry, being president is hard, but like, you're gonna sit for that deposition because it's having people be able to vindicate their rights is a thing that's also important. And by the way, like, a deposition is not the end of the world. Suck it up." I'm paraphrasing the Supreme Court a little bit. And so now Republicans want to characterize that as a case about federal civil lawsuits against a president for conduct before the presidency. And
they're trying to pigeonhole it as much as possible. Yeah, like on a Wednesday with a woman whose name starts with M, or, you know, just to think
exactly.
That was what that ruling was, and we're not going to use it for anything.
And again, you know, look, we've got lawyers in the audience, like... That when the Supreme Court has undercut the argument for your executive privilege, right, which is, hey, I'm the president and I'm real super busy, that gives you a strong indication that they're not likely to come out in favor of an absolute theory. And I think even this howler monkey Supreme Court is unlikely to endorse that because the ruling they craft will apply when Elizabeth Warren is president, and they don't want that to happen.
Remind me, who's the Dancing with the Stars Department of Energy guy again?
Rick Perry.
Yeah, Rick Perry. If Giuliani's just doing what Trump says, and Trump's just doing what Rick Perry says, I think we've got we know who's pulling the strings.
There
it's Rick Perry. He's in charge of all of them. All right, let's see if we can.
On the,
yeah,
on the,
we'll see if we can reach over
stage
there.
Stage left wing.
I was already doing that. Stage right, I think. House left.
I'm used,
anyway,
you tell the theater.
You're gonna
major
have to come down a little bit. Sorry, this is a lot. Well, hold on. How much we got over there? Report back. Well, y'all got some room. Oh, here you go.
So questions, PG&E question may invoke some screaming. I just spent like last 3 days in Palo Alto in some of the poor neighborhoods, but like not the poorest. So I was like 3 blocks away from all the shutdowns. It was great. Question, as a flaming liberal socialist, I am somebody who thinks that utilities and shit that I rely on every day should probably be controlled by the government and beholden to voters instead of shareholders. How does that happen legally? Is that a constitutional amendment? Is that a 5-decades-long plan of baby step bills being passed and a constant, you know, dragging the Overton window, kicking and screaming to the left? How does that work?
Great question. You know, after I raged about PG&E, I did get a message where someone said, hey, Thomas, wouldn't you be under SMUD and not PG&E? I was like, oh, yeah, I guess so. But I don't get, it's not me. Like, it was my parents and Lydia's parents. But anyway, yeah. Question, how do we do this? Pitchforks and glow sticks?
Yeah, great question. That is Bryce Blankenegel, everybody, host of the Naked Mormonism podcast, which if you're not listening to Naked Mormonism, you should be. No, great question. And look, there's really a simple answer here, and that is that Congress has the power to regulate interstate commerce. And until fairly recently, that power has been defined really, really broadly. It is 100% clear, for reasons we talk about this a little bit on today's show, PG&E purchases power from other states, right? So even though PG&E may only serve, and I don't know whether they also serve states outside of California, probably do. But even if they didn't,
I think so.
Yeah, I think they get Wisconsin and Oregon, Wisconsin, Washington and Oregon. Sorry, it's been a long show.
Yeah, and then the power lines jump a few states and go over to Wisconsin. Yeah, it's fine. Yeah. So you're already talking federally, though. Like, can California just be like, fuck this? I feel like California has been getting done lately, right? Californians, some of you, yeah. Can they do this or no? It has to be.
So yeah, no. That for all the reasons that it's interstate commerce, it would be very, very difficult for California to nationalize or to state.
Well,
to
you're talking about PG&E
power company
interacts with other states, but couldn't California just be like, hey, fuck all that. California, we're passing a bill that's, we want our state to control the utility for our state. It has nothing to do with, like, whether or not the company that currently does it, you know? Is that not a possible argument?
I think you could craft some sort of requirement that says, that, you know, that would phase in. I mean, you would have to deal with the existing contracts between the state and PG&E, so they would have to expire, or you would be liable in damages for the breach of contract.
Oh, boo-hoo, we have zillions. And we're already paying so much for PG&E.
Well, yeah, and PG&E is in bankruptcy, so you might be able to discharge those contracts in bankruptcy. That would be super complicated, and the federal government could, and this is where I was going to get to. Because it affects interstate commerce, the federal government could preempt that California state law, right? So they could pass the
capital. So the federal government, yeah, they can make sure that a state has to get its utilities from a corporation and not under their own control?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, wow. What happened to states' rights, everybody?
Yeah, well, you know.
That's rough. Well, that's depressing, Bryce, but thanks for the question. Let's stay over here while I've got the slack here, and then we can go back across the room if we have that many questions. Here's how far I can get, ready, before the stage manager guy yells at me. Now, here we go.
All right, sorry, this might be a really stupid question, but I've had it for a long time, and you're probably the best one who can answer it, so here goes. I've wondered for a long time why a Democratic president, Obama, wouldn't just make federal election day a holiday, like permanently, and then wouldn't that just, because of the number of Democrats that are limited by the ability to vote on election day, that would swing so many elections in so many states in favor of Democrats. And if it's not a unilateral power that the president has, when Obama came in, he had all of Congress also. So why isn't that priority one and then win every election? Could be a stupid question. But
no,
I think that's a great question.
Yeah, that is absolutely not a stupid question. So here's the answer to that. What the federal government can do is declare a federal holiday. That has to be passed by law. And so that is in the hands of Congress. It is not something that the president can do unilaterally. The last time we did this was in 1983, I believe, with the creation of the Martin Luther King Day federal holiday, which I remember as history. I was very, very young in 1983. In history, involved racists, in particular, Jesse Helms, who's the kind of person who would be Secretary of State if he were alive today. just a monster of a human being, taking to the floor to filibuster Martin Luther King Day as a national holiday because he was a giant fucking racist. And that filibuster was broken by Bob Dole, Republican from Tennessee. So, you know, we used to have Republicans with conscience. Anyway, so it would be a congressional issue. Now, why didn't Obama do it in the first year and a half in which he had a filibuster-proof majority in the Senate and Democratic control of the House of Representatives? That's something I've said on the show a bunch of times, which is, look, I think that the fundamental McCain critique of Barack Obama, right, which is, this is a guy who's been a senator for like a week and a half and was in the Illinois state legislature before that and has no executive experience, right? Like, I think that's a good critique, right? Like, it certainly was not enough for me to vote for McCain over Obama, but like, it was true. He had no executive experience, and I think he was totally in over his head in that first year and a half and failed to press the advantage in the way that somebody with more experience would not be.
I agree with that, but I think we also, I mean, obviously I'm pretty sure everybody here can remember 2008 and 2009, and it just, I don't know that it was on people, I'm sure somebody had that belief out there, but I don't know that it was on people's radars because it felt like, okay, finally, fuck these Republicans, it's over, we win, guys, like we did it. And I just wonder if it just wasn't a priority for that reason, and trying to get healthcare to 25 million people-ish that didn't have it, you know, that kind of thing.
But think about
it. Would have been very fast to just do, right?
Yeah, well, and what I want to say by comparison is, think about the way in which Donald Trump and Mitch McConnell have conspired in the first 2 years of the Trump presidency to ram through. Again, Donald Trump right now is on a pace to appoint more judges than Barack Obama and Bill Clinton and George W. Bush combined in 16 years. So,
you know, I'll tell you this. I wonder
if that's terrifying.
And we all know that that's 1,000% Mitch McConnell and 0% to -50% Donald Trump, because he doesn't know any of this stuff. But then maybe I wonder if the blame should shift in a situation where you have a new president who doesn't have that
Harry
much.
To Harry Reid?
Exactly, yeah. To the majority leader at the time. Maybe that's where the blame should
be. I'm totally willing to say that. I think the reason is that Barack Obama was more willing. Right? Let's imagine that Harry Reid is mirror universe Mitch McConnell.
Oh my God, the world would be so much better if that had been true. In 2009, can you imagine?
Yeah. I mean, imagine what the Republicans would have done if we had had 60 Republican senators in 2017, right? I mean, it and so I still think that the failure to do that anticipatorily really is, you know, the sort of the one thing is the lack of executive experience, and the other is, right, we've talked about this on the show. It's documented as a fact. This is the Constitutional Hardball Law Review article I mention every couple of episodes. It is a proven fact that Democrats are more willing to abide by norms than Republicans, and that's what we did. There was this idea of, well, even though Barack Obama won 373 electoral votes, 372, he won Indiana in 2008, right? Like, there was a landslide mandate to bring in progressive change to this country, and I think Democrats were sort of afraid of pressing that advantage.
Well, but Republican what's-his-f*** said nobody, no president has ever had as much bad will against him as Trump. Well, I'll tell you what, we're at 9 o'clock, but we did get started a little late, and I, for one, could certainly go for some more Q&A. Do you want to go? We started you late. Do you want to go at least maybe 15 more minutes? Questions? What do you think? All right, let's do it. I don't want to deprive the fine audience of their questions. Let's work.
Thank you for not as one going, no,
yeah,
we want to get the hell out of here.
We all regret buying tickets. We want to go. Okay, platinum question. Sorry, I got to go.
So with the whole thing with Trump going on and what you'll miss... you know, that you're watching all the senators to see which ones are going to start jumping the fence. Well, who's the one you're watching? Because we know people like we know like Susan Collins. She's gonna go over. Amasha's gone over. Who's the one that you think right now we're going?
Yep. The
Senator Blevins.
Yeah.
and he issued an amazing statement, very well written.
The person that I have had my eye on for a year and a half now is Richard Burr of North Carolina. He's the chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee. And the Senate Intelligence Committee, despite being Republican-controlled, was the one that produced the report that, in a bipartisan way, said, oh, yeah, Russia clearly intervened in our 2016 elections, and they did so to favor Donald Trump and in opposition to Hillary Clinton. Unlike the Howler Monkey Caucus in the House of Representatives that produced a report that was like written in crayon that said, no, Russia is cool. Like, I think, look, if Richard Burr were here in the audience, right, he would have left 5 minutes into the show, right? He is no friend of the show. He is not like, he doesn't have quirky positions. He is a doctrinaire, right-wing conservative that all of you guys would hate if you sat down with him to chat with. But I think he's the chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee, and I think he does not want a hostile foreign power to control our elections. He may, again, that this is not, he has not been a profile in courage so far, but I think at the moment at which Burr says this is serious, that's what I'm looking for the floodgate.
So remember that the quote that was the guy in the letter to his mom who was like, hey hon, please don't go against Nixon, I want you to be a senator still, that guy. It's interesting because his response, so he was a junior, he was a representative, I think, and he had just been elected representative for Virginia, I think it was. And he was like, look, we all campaigned on, like, no corruption. It's funny to see a Republican, because, again, it's a Republican talking about a Republican president. And he's like, we kind of campaigned against corruption. Like, this is a lot of fucking corruption. Like, maybe this is bad. And he stood up for it. But I think what's interesting, I know a lot of us have consumed a lot of Watergate stuff in the wake of Trump and all that, and we've said, I think I've said from that, and we've said on the show that if Nixon had Fox News, he would easily have finished his term. But you know what? When I was doing a little research for my bar exam here, I was reading an article that was like he wouldn't have even needed Fox News. It was actually really close, and if not for the fact that Nixon had some sort of respect for norms, in that some Republican leaders, you know, we have talked about this before, but they went up to him like, dude, you don't have the votes anymore. People think, the article I was reading was speculating, like, if he had just said, okay, well, I don't care, I'm going to stay in power, that I don't think he would have gotten impeached. Like, they, you know, like, and it's amazing to look at, even back then, even though it seems like things were a little better in terms of Republicans actually standing up for these things, it still was very difficult. And it was almost, he almost stayed in power even back then. So it's just an uphill battle to get a politician to actually critique their own side, is I guess the point I'm making. So,
yeah, I agree with that. And again, this is something Thomas and I both said on the show, but I think it's worth saying again here at the live show. The impeachment of Donald Trump is not about removing Donald Trump from office, right? I am still not confident that that is a likely outcome.
Well, it is. You mean it's not like that's the thought process wasn't, how do we remove him? Oh, I know. We'll impeach him for something. You're saying it's the other, like, yeah. Okay. Because I still want to remove him.
Yeah, no.
I'm pretty sure impeachment literally is about removing him from office. That's all. That's the only reason say that. But yeah, I mean, even if Pence will be weirder and call his wife mother and all that stuff, it's still, we need to fucking do it. It's, you don't get out of jail free card for finding the one guy who's a bigger weirdo than you. That shouldn't be how the Constitution works. Okay, another question.
So Trump famously ignores the Presidential Records Act and tears up all his documents, and Jared Kushner uses WhatsApp to conspire with Saudi royalty, and all of our European diplomats are using WhatsApp. So obviously we only care about keeping records when it happens to do with Hillary's emails, but DOG is not going to enforce this. So who has standing to try and sue the government to force them to start following the law on this?
That is a fantastic question. And I think that the recent McKeever versus Barr case, which we've talked about a little bit on the show, may cast some light on the standing issue. So let me, for the benefit of the rest of the audience, remember that the courts don't decide advisory questions, right? So the fact that records are not being kept, right, is not, it's not enough for any one of us to go forward and say, the president's a lying monster who's
breaking
the law.
But I would have looked at those records. I have standing. I would have had fun with them.
And that's right. And so, and that gets to where I think the answer is. So you have to have standing. You have to be injured by the fact that, that they're not keeping records. And I think there are two sort of plausible paths to having standing. One is being part of a good government interest group, right, like a common cause kind of group. And those cases, right, like common cause is a part of the emoluments lawsuits. And those cases have not been decided on standing, right? They've been decided on non-justiciability of the injury, but they haven't said you're not hurt by the fact that the president is using the powers of his office to unjustly enrich himself. They've said, yeah, we get it. That's a cognizable injury to an interest group. So that would be the one. And then the second would be any government employee who is in charge of records, right? Like, so, and it doesn't have to be like the official White House archivist, right? I don't know who that is, but it could be like a career civil servant.
The complaint is like, it's really my filing. I'm missing these records.
It kind of is. Yeah.
I'm a completionist. I want all the records. I don't have them. Can I sue?
But right? This is that's a great question, and this is a real. That is one of the things that's infamously on the whiteboard. Like it's this is a
eminent domain, baby. We're also gonna get
that is on since 2016. but no, like the destruction of records is literally unprecedented, and it's really, really important that we not have that. Again, something Nixon wouldn't do.
Yeah.
Opening right, arguments, good friend Richard Nixon.
So back to PG&E. A man has died because of the power outages. Is it at all possible to hold like the executives of the company responsible for his death?
Well, I can answer that one. Yeah. You already answered. No, it'll be they'll get out of it. The statute says if they think there's an emergency and they're really sorry about it, then they can turn off your power and kill people. There's nothing we can do about it. Is that? Did I get it?
Well, no. You're also there's part of that, but also. The statute and the interpreting regulations allow PG&E to set up its own rules to decide when, in the interest of safety, they need to shut down the power to prevent potential.
Sorry, sir, we're killing you for your own safety. It's just.
But that decision. So PG&E gets to make the rules. They get to interpret when they get to shut down. And then that decision is reviewed for reasonableness by the Public Utility Commission of California. And so the answer to your question is, if the Public Utility Commission decides that this decision was, and I forget the exact language of the statute, but if it was a valid decision, then that will absolutely immunize them from suit, because they will then have, we acted under color of law as a defense to any kind of lawsuit. And let me add, it would be
well.
Even
that's
in California,
reasonable. It seems like because obviously you know there are real emergencies and times they have to turn off the power, and like it would be wrong for them to be like criminally liable if they turned off the power because something was wrong. It was going to cause a real safety issue, and unfortunately somebody died or was injured. Like it makes sense, but I guess then all the weight of that is on this one board that none of us had ever heard of until the other day when Andrew mentioned it, and now we're like, who is on that board? I hope it's not people that have received bags of money from PG&E. I'd have no idea. Who's on the board? Do you know? Am I on
do
it?
Not know.
Are any of you on it?
But they
I don't know who's on. Who is that? I don't know. I guess getting involved in government at every level is important. It sounds like maybe, perhaps.
Yeah, that is a really important takeaway.
Okay, here we go. So,
you have someone dressed for yodeling who okay, they so definitely
when,
has
when Elizabeth Warren wins the Electoral College, how worried are you that Trump will say she's illegitimate and he will incite violence and refuse to turn over power?
How worried am I that he will say that? I think there's a 100% chance he will say that. I am not worried that will have anything beyond the real issue. And this is something Thomas said, I think, a couple of months ago, and I say it at every opportunity. I think I said it in conversation at the Platinum Night last night, which is regardless of what happens in the 2020 election, let's assume the best case scenario, which is not only does Elizabeth Warren win, but she wins overwhelming. She wins an Obama 2008 style landslide. Right?
Yeah,
which
huh? Let's do it. All right. Yeah, let's make it happen.
Which is the most anybody is going to get.
And the Senate, by the way. Yep. Let's do that, too. That's important. Yep. All of them.
If all of that happens, there will still be 60 million people who will have cast votes for Donald Trump. There will be 60 million people in this country who looked at the last 4 years and said, sounds good, give me more of that. And we have to deal with those people after Elizabeth Warren went. They are a part of the process. And that, I think, is the sort of overarching challenge of the next presidential administration. And so the threats of violence, right? Like his contingent, whether or not he makes those threats, his contingent will have gone out and will have said, yeah, we want more of this. And I don't have a solution for like the toxic destruction of politics, right? Like I don't have a solution to there is a sitting member of Congress who chokeslammed a journalist who asked him a question and then won 3 days later, right? Like that's, I'm out of words for that. So.
I think it's also interesting that we look at this as like, oh, what's going to happen if they lose? And we kind of feel like, oh, they won, so they're fine. But actually, if you look at right-wing violence, it's at all-time high. You know, it's just on an upward trajectory since Trump won. And it's nothing more than an observation. Like, it is interesting that it's the idea that like, oh, if we satisfy, you know, if we appease them, then they'll go. It's like, no, they're being more violent than ever in my lifetime. So, like, we just have to deal with it, I guess. I don't know. Whatever. But just to make it absolutely clear, we get a lot of questions about, like, what if Trump just refused to leave? What if Trump just refused to leave? And people still ask it. People are still worried. But you're just not at all. You're not worried about that. That's not a thing.
I'm not. Look, if that happens, right, if parts of the Secret Service defect and Trump, you know, holes up in the White House and Kevin McCarthy is like, well, everything's fine, then I have to stop doing the show, right? Like, I mean, literally, at that point, why should I be a lawyer, right? Like, there will be no laws.
You hear
that,
Matthew?
It will be Thunderdome. And we'll do a new show called Opening Thunderdome.
To come up with the bylaws, we'll figure it out. There'll be small roaming clans that will have militia. We'll come up with the rules. Opening Arguments is brought to you by Vistaprint. You know, the most important time is right now. It is so important to feel professional, polished, and prepared when it counts right now. For small business owners, or people who produce their own podcasts, or people who want to make really amazing Optimus Prime V Negatron placards and print them, and they look beautiful, and I use Vistaprint, and they're amazing, and people at live shows get them as little keepsakes. All that being plugged in and prepared when an opportunity comes up is crucial. Those moments happen all the time. They're happening right now. And having a business card that shows how professional you are in your pocket, ready to hand out, is the first step to making something happen. Your next big opportunity is coming right now, and we're here to help you own the now with free shipping on any business card in any quantity. Choose whatever style, finish, shape, or paper you like and get free shipping. And because you can pick the colors, fonts, designs, and images, it means you can create something as unique and compelling as your business. You ready to get started on your business card? It's easy. Plug your information and logo into hundreds of fresh designs tailored to your type of company, or upload your own original layout. Pick the paper stock, style, and quantity that's right for you. You can even upgrade to a unique touch like rounded corners. Order and receive your cards with free economy shipping. As if you needed any more reasons to choose Vistaprint, you can feel good knowing that Vistaprint uses only carefully selected inks and responsibly sourced paper stocks. Your satisfaction is 100% guaranteed, or your money back. They'll make it right. Vistaprint wants you to be able to own the now in any situation, which is why our listeners will get free shipping on all business cards, any style, any quantity. Just go to Vistaprint.com and enter promo code OA for free shipping on all business cards, any style, any quantity, limited time offer. Own the now at Vistaprint.com, promo code OA. You can support our show when you support our sponsors. Okay, another question. Yodel from you.
I can't believe I'm the only one that got the Yodel Mountain cosplay memo.
I have a pair of opening arguments briefs for you.
So Trump has had a lot of defeats in the lower courts, but looking at the Supreme Court docket, what are you looking at that is the most concerning for you, or what should we be looking at as things that should be concerning for us with the new cases that they're hearing?
So clarification question. Do you mean what am I worried about from the Supreme Court perspective in connection with impeachment, or just what am I worried that the Supreme Court is going to do that's going to be horrible?
The latter.
Yeah.
Because that's not really related to Trump mostly. It's mostly like taking away women's rights to choose and making it okay to fire people for being gay, right? Which has nothing to do with Trump other than that he put the people in power.
And let me give you two answers to that that are exactly what Thomas just said. The first is the Supreme Court has granted cert in a case called June Medical Services versus McGee. This is a case the Supreme Court has already decided in a previous version called Whole Women's Health versus Hellerstedt that involves, Texas passed a law that required certification for abortion facilities they have to like have a level 7 NICU, and they have to have a doctor with 30 years of experience from an Ivy League college on staff, and like all of these things that have nothing to do with providing medical services to shut down abortion clinics, right? Like that has been the game plan of the right since 1992, since Planned Parenthood versus Casey, is to define things that clearly unduly burden a woman's right to choose as not unduly burdening a woman's right to choose. The June case, the facts in that are so bad that the only reason I can think of for the Supreme Court to grant cert in that case is to either reverse Roe outright or to craft what we've talked about on the show as what I think is sort of even a worse scenario from that, which is we're going to get a 5-4 Roberts opinion with Justice Roberts and the four liberals that preserves Roe v. Wade, but undercuts it even further. And I think Roberts is going to go to the liberal wing and be like, hey, I can join with the howler monkeys and we can overrule Roe v. Wade, or we can craft something to try and keep a little sliver of it. So that's all in one category.
And the minute you said that, I think you've been saying that for a couple years now. The minute you said it, my worst timeline calculator went off and was like, ding, ding, that's what will happen. And Roe will still be in name only. And so a bunch of annoying people will be like, ugh, liberals, there's still Roe v. Wade. And then effectively it will be unavailable to, like, women just won't be able to get an abortion, as they already can't in a lot of states, effectively. And that's absolutely going to happen. We'll get all the horrible media coverage saying, like, oh, look, the Supreme Court's actually great. They upheld Roe. And only opening arguments listeners and a couple other smart people will know what's really going on.
And the other thing that I have been flagging, and I really want to be wrong about this, is that I believe there are 5 votes on the Supreme Court to overrule Obergefell. That terrifies me. But I think when you read the Roberts dissent in Obergefell, right, it's not measured. It is not thoughtful. It is ranting howler monkey.
Sounds like something from the Tony Alamo Ministries is really what it sounds like.
It is, I find gay people icky. And I think the folks on the left, and I've talked to a lot of people on the left who are super confident in the Roberts institutional thesis, right? And you guys listen to the show, you know I endorse the Roberts institutional thesis, or, embarrass John Roberts as the key to preventing the worst possible outcomes. A lot of people on the left are really, really confident that John Roberts is not going to overrule and undo millions of marriages in this country, and I do not share that confidence, right? Like, Obergefell is 2015, right? Like, this is not
Listener Thomas S. Do you think we should focus on impeaching Kavanaugh? Because it really seems like, especially with the latest, the book that came out, it's on my list. I can't wait to get to it, but I've already read a lot about it. What is it? She Said, I think it's called. the book that came out that details all these new allegations. It details all the ways we already knew that he lied to Congress. All this stuff we know. It is impeachable. Is it like, I mean, is that the way we try to deal with this or so unrealistic?
I don't know that it's unrealistic, but whenever you chart a new course, right, you have to have a story that is crystal clear to 2/3 of the American public, right? And I don't know what that story is right now.
Not a possible thing or fact that is crystal clear to 2/3 of Americans anymore, like of any kind. The sky is blue, global warming, science.
I hear you.
Any of it.
I hear you. And I would like to kind of talk about it, but in terms of whether there will be political capital to do that, I think is contingent upon being able to say the story in a sentence in a way that resonates with average.
The guy f***ing lied. The guy f***ing lied. The guy f***ing lied. Really, okay, right. Impeach him. There we go. Impeach the motherfucker.
I'm with you, but
no, I hear you. It's tough. All right, I think we're about out of time. Do we want to do one more? Is anybody else like gonna die if they don't get to ask this question? Oh, Carrie. Okay, I'm gonna walk all the way over here. Unless you want to come sit down and ask your question. You've earned a question. Here you.
If a person, any person, was planning a wedding and trying to set the date, how much should they avoid fall 2020? Like, will all the guests be terribly depressed? Yes? What are the odds of that?
Wow. So first, congratulations.
Congratulations
on your recent engagement. I will point out, Drew, that when we recorded with Carrie and Matthew, we weren't recording. We were just having a conversation that we should have recorded because it was awesome. And we were sharing things back and forth on the in Skype, including the publicity shot of Melissa Scott, who it must be said was not only a porn actress but was a porn actress in 1986. So like
you know what the you already know
you
the
know
picture.
You immediately know what. The hair, she looks like she's coming out of a Whitesnake video. It's amazing. And Carrie shared with us the announcement.
Yeah, so here's what happened. I had logged out of Skype by when you sent that. So Carrie was very confused when I didn't know the news already. She's like, I thought you knew. I was like, why would I know? And then the next time I went to do an interview, I turned on Skype and the messages came through. I'm like, oh, I missed all that. I'm an idiot. Sorry. So, but anyway, congratulations. And when should they have their wedding? Set the date. You're in charge.
Yeah. Don't take marriage. No.
October 2020.
But so look, I will say what I've been saying that was true in the 2018 midterms, which is what we need to do is vote in numbers that are too large for them to suppress, for them to dispute. And to overcome the institutional effects of gerrymandering, we can do this, right? Like we
also
did
need to attend Carrie's wedding in numbers that are too high to turn down. I hereby invite you all to Carrie's wedding. I'm pretty sure she's cool with that. Let's do it. It's gonna happen.
So look, I don't want. I think nobody on the left will ever be confident about anything again ever after 2016. Because if you had asked me the day before, like, on election night...
Oh, I asked you while it was happening, and you were still very confident that it wasn't happening.
Was.
I have the text.
Yeah.
I was losing my mind. I was like, Andrew, I don't think you're right. I don't think you're right.
No, it's true. I went next door. I lived next door to my sister. Like, we made, like, a big map, and, like, her... son we, like was going to color in
look
state.
We could go out on a high note. We don't want to do this.
Anyway,
we all know what
anyway,
happened.
So,
wedding.
So look.
Happy.
Look, I'm going to be happy with this. So yeah, I get it. Nobody's ever going to be confident again in predictions in 538 and anything like that. And you shouldn't be. But I think we will know very early on in 2020 that we are headed for another wave election. That was true in 2018. It remained true throughout 2018. we delivered on those results, and I think we're going to have it again in 2020, and I want to be at your wedding, and I want to be toasting and celebrating. So you're fine. There you go.
Right. Having said that, get it done in October. All right. Thank you guys so much for coming. We enjoyed this so much. Seriously, it's so fun. And now it's time to thank our top patrons, our Hall of Famers, our all-time greats here on Top Patron Tuesday. Patreon.com/law. Go join their ranks. Get all the perks. It's a lot of fun. I will start us off with Mark DeLillo, Murray Gregerson, Hillary 2020, number one supporter, Miranda Devine. Okay. Happy birthday, Samuel J. Snipe, Jennifer Davies, Vibov. The U.S. Constitution is the Ouija board of originalists wanting to something. I don't know what, but do whatever. Quarks is the best fictional bar. 10 Forward is a close second.
Ooh, Swerves. Swerves is the best fictional bar, but keep going.
No idea what you're talking about. The Oxford comma is necessary, comma, and ellipsis only has three dots with two dots at the end. Cogdis is my favorite podcast. Always a close second. We'll take it. Will the Cherokee get a representative in the House and Electoral College? Probably not, but maybe they should. Rab, TJ is a Delaware Law 2L. Zirkel, the P in P. Andrew Torres is a sternly worded letter. So good. After all that we have been through, Rally deserves the next live show. Elbow of Justice from the Sky, any second now. Yeah, feel free to leave in my stupidity. I get it. Fair is fair. I feel like I've done that to you before. Emily Rainbow Spence, what do we want? Time travel. When do we want it? That is irrelevant.
I love that.
Jason Copas, how much for that fame and fortune in the window? Michael Blevins, I'm donating as much to you as my wife does to church. Hotspear.com, keep your valuables and yourself safe at the beach. Trump's greatest foreign policy achievement is firing his national security advisor. I'm actually an Amicus boxer briefs guy. We shall use the larger scales. It's legal. It's advice. It's not legal advice. Dragonfly.eco, books about nature and the environment, reviews and interviews. Michelle Cloud, the Trump School of Gaslighting and Presidential Library at Liberty U. Yep. At Aspera per Aspera. At Astra per Aspera. Nate Drex, Stuff and Polls, Party Pooper Polly. Resolve, the United States should adopt a policy to deport Rudy Giuliani. I wish. Impeach Justice Beer Wong Weenie Waver. Beer Bong Weenie Waver. I'm all over the place today. Darth Mandy Pants. Umanum Brewing. 13th Century Saxony Gravel Truck Lawyer. Moloch 2020. Dance the Night Away at the Carbolic Smoke Ball. Jennifer Cratch. We're not lawyers, but you can take our advice. Summit Shuffleboard.com. Nats, woo. Okay, this is before, we're recording this before we know whether they beat the Dodgers, and I'm rooting for the Dodgers, so we'll see. Nightmare on Pennsylvania Avenue. Portland patrons for a something Tacoma live show. There's a bunch of characters that came in weird. Fighting My Depression, one podcast at a time. Steven Balticatai Sandoval. I'm here because Diogenes the Cynic was right. I refuse to cooperate in an impeachment inquiry until a Seattle live show. Man, they are really pushing for it. Read Factfulness at Bill Barr's Barbarian Beard Barber and Beer Bar. V. Frank, the UK Constitution seems a little like the rules for Calvin Ball. Well, we have hearsay and conjecture. Those are kinds of evidence. Andrea, the arbitrary and capricious. CivilPoliticsRadio.com, Fridays at 7 p.m. Eastern on Valley Free Radio. Live show in Seattle, or Tacoma. Registry Matters. Sternly Worded Tamales. John Bilderbeck. The end is nigh. Go to clownhornvoting.com or T3BE will not go well. I think it will not go well regardless. Adam Costa, Jay Aldenwalt, and Eric Elsman. Your turn, Andrew.
Wow. All right. Thank you to Pain Strumpet. To America's pastime should be shaming racists. Yeah, let's get that going. Thomas Smith is my favorite attorney. Andrew is a close second. Me too, oddly enough. Trambolus, Napoleon. Oh, thank you, sir. Kiwa Valley Exports for Australian red meat and craft beer. Trump Stumped, Rudy Moody, Bartard. Let me be totally clear. I like being totally clear. Milo Meadsong passed the Illinois bar and his brother got married. Well, congratulations. Susan, a property lawyer, slipped on a banana. Next patron continues. Keep at it. Keep trying. Join your labor union. Together we bargain, alone we beg. Patron names about friendly atheists are so meta. The time traveler who prevented Justice Garland's pun-filled descent. Oh, yeah. Nice. Arthur Two Sheds Jackson. Cosmo Blues is not my legal name, but Karaoke Legend is my legal title. James Call, the Civil War will be live tweeted. Update, Dorian put a hole in my roof, FML. Yeah, sorry. Jonathan Steele is a great dad fund. Anonymous, Sam Buck. Can we have an episode about rugby law, please? Maybe. Couldn't build the house of trigonometry. No one would co-sign. Oh, God, that is such a great dad math joke. I love it. I don't want just any wasp nostrils. I want these wasp nostrils. I have no idea what that's supposed to be, but it's kind of, you know, wasp nostrils is kind of a funny phrase. Closing concessions. The great and unmatched wisdom of Guy Chapman, very stable genius. God, we didn't even cover that in the past episodes. There's too much. WordOrigins.org, your source for legal terms from 13th century Saxony. It's a yodel stairmaster and it never gets higher. Disagree. Justin Beecham, the horse has left the barn is an absolute defense for obstruction. Derek, the way Andrew pronounces corollary is downright un-American. Bro, try out this hearsay. It'll clown horn you up, bro. Oh no, I might be Devin Nunes's distant cousin, David in Brooklyn, Big Easy Blasphemy, a string of unpronounceable characters. Philip K. Dick is my favorite racist sci-fi author. H.P. Lovecraft is a close second. Ironically, this all ends with Epstein and Dersh getting screwed by boys. Rhonda wants to recall Governor Dunleavy and save Alaska. Good morning, Camp Quest. Malaika Chandler, Abacus Flinch, Soggy Pants, Greg Sullivan, Matthew Vernon, Sam Danow. Adopt a homeless pet and oppose declawing and ear docking. A classic. Tiny Dick Damages, Aaron Grady, Heather L., the fabulous transcriptionist. Sakashite Fukasumi, you shall not eat regular owls, lesser owls, or greater owls. Well, what kind of owls can I eat then? Jeremiah's Fancy Microwave Emporium, Ian and Allie, cannot wait for the live OA show. Well, that will be over by the time you hear this. So, but we couldn't.
Well, they of course mean the next one.
The next one in Seattle. Yeah.
Raleigh, Washington.
Raleigh, Washington? Yeah, okay. Eli Bosnick, Zabby, Teresa Gomez. Wow, I'm shocked that she doesn't have a name this week. Mitchell. Money for utils, capitalism at its finest. Tarquin, Finn, Tim, Linbin, Wimbim, Lim, Bus Stop, Vatang, Vatang, Ole, Biscuit Barrel. I agree with that 100%. Such a good. And of course, our all time great, he who shall never be dethroned, Conrad Michaels.
All right. Well, now it's time for the thrilling conclusion of T3B Wrong E.
Yeah, this is T3BE2 Electric Boogaloo.
Wrong exam. Yeah.
Oh, no associate of this firm has ever failed the bar exam.
Talk to the hand. I need your clothes. That's one of my mission parameters. Trust me. I know now why you cry.
The facts so great they gave them to you twice. So yeah, everybody knows this by now, right? Bright 12-year-old sneaks out of daycare. Goes out onto the thin ice, falls through the thin ice, has to be rescued, would have died. There's a sign that says thin ice, keep off. The daycare center was staffed with a reasonable number of qualified employees, and the employees were exercising reasonable care to ensure that the children in charge did not leave their premises. So this is, you know, crafty, bright 12-year-old who sneaks out. There had not been a previous instance of a child sneaking onto the corporation's property. The question, this one, 148, in a suit brought on the child's behalf against the daycare center, based on the facts above, who is likely to prevail? Thomas, you instantly eliminated B, the child, because the daycare center is located near a pond. I want to continue to flag for you that one of these days, the stupid sounding answer is going to be right. That is an important bar exam tip, but not this day. That stupid sounding answer is definitely wrong.
Yeah. No, I'm glad, because that day will be when I quit my law career, which I know nobody wants me to do. And that's true. I think even the stupid answer could be right but it'll be different than this. Like this was just stupid. I mean, anyway, we'll see. We'll see. Someday we'll talk about when it's the stupid answer.
Yeah, just being next to a pond is not evidence of negligence. So, you know, it is what it is. You mauled between A, C, and D. A, the child because he left the center while he was under the center's care. Ultimately, you rejected that. Good rejection. Daycare centers are not strictly liable, right? Mm. So that would be a test for strict liability. It would be like, no, yeah, look, he was within the test.
That was what I was trying to say. Okay. Yeah. I feel like I nailed that analysis. Yeah. I really was between C and D. I should have, for the sake of second chance bar exam, I should have had the guts to eliminate A, but I didn't have the guts.
Well, so then if you're saying the daycare center is going to prevail, the question is, does it prevail because it was not negligent, which is C, or does it prevail because the child was a trespasser? You went with C, and I am pleased to tell you that is correct. Ooh. Simple answer, simple analysis. Sometimes simple is best. Yep. The D is the incorrect answer.
But you can see what I was seeing with D, right? Is there some logic to that answer? What do you think?
There absolutely is some logic to that answer because committing a trespass may make you negligent per se, right?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
But that's not what you need to establish in this case, right? That would then, the contrapositive of that would be, well, if the child wasn't trespassing,
Right. Then, well, that's downstream of the answer C, right?
Like exactly if, right. Exactly okay. right. Best way to put it. I was going to put it a slightly different
way. I should have said
way.
It that way in the moment, but I'm glad I got the right answer anyway.
Yeah, correct answer. And for the right reason, right? Because even if the child had not been a trespasser, that wouldn't have made the daycare center negligent. You have to resolve that question first. Downstream is, it's not the legal word, but it's such a great way of expressing it that I think it should be. So, good job.
A legal word. Awesome.
Well, no, I mean, it you use downstream liability when you're talking about putting things into commerce, right?
Oh,
so
I see.
It comes out a lot in copyright infringement cases, right? So, you know, let's say I steal someone else's design and then I sell that on Amazon. Can you sue Amazon for copyright infringement, right? And the answer is usually yes, right? Even though they are the downstream recipient of the material that was that violated the copyright. Now, again, there's a thing for innocent infringers. We're not doing a deep dive on copyright in this closing T3BE
segment. This is a T3BE answer. Come on, Andrew.
But anyway, I love it. Yeah. So correct answer for the correct reasons.
Back
Good
on
job.
The saddle. You know, my strategy has been, I'm just going to try to go with the logical correct answer. It's not going to be right every time, you know, but like that's my chance at this bar exam, and tell you what, it's working.
Love it.
Now didn't work for like sure nine is. Questions in a row, but it's working for the last few. All right, well, future Andrew is gonna hop in his time machine. Well, current Andrew is gonna hop in his time machine, and future Andrew will hop into this episode to tell us who this week's big winner is.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
Well, Thomas, today's winner is Terry Cannon on Twitter, who not only got the question right, but took a shot at you, which is my favorite way of getting the question right, who writes, Thomas got the right answer, and he really analyzed it well, but this question is too easy to have actually been on a bar exam. The question tells you the daycare center employees were not negligent, and then one of the options is they weren't negligent. Actually, Terry, this is a real bar exam prep question put out by the bar exam company. Company in charge of administering the bar exam, that is the National Conference of Bar Examiners, NCBE, and this is their official manual prep for the multi-state bar examination, which is what T3BE is all about. So real prep question, and look, there are real bar questions that that kind of fit into that pattern. But anyway, congratulations on getting the answer right, Terry, and congratulations on your shot at Thomas. I appreciated it. Everyone, give Terry a follow on Twitter. That is at Terry, T-E-R-R-Y-M, Cannon, C-A-N-N-O-N, all one word. So T-E-R-R-Y-M, C-A-N-N-O-N. And congratulations for being this week's winner.
All right, that's it for today's show. It was so fun to see everybody at the live show. I'm glad you guys got to hear that as well. And we'll see you on Friday.
You betray the law!
This has been Opening Arguments with Andrew and Thomas. If you love the show and want to support future episodes, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/law. If you can't support us financially, it'd be a big help if you could leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever podcast delivery vehicle you use. And be sure to tell all your friends about us. For questions, suggestions, and complaints, email us at openarguments@gmail.com. The show notes and links are on our website at www.openargs.com. Be sure to like our page on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @openargs. Until next time. This podcast is a production of Opening Arguments Media, LLC. All rights reserved.
Opening Arguments is a copyrighted production of Opening Arguments Media, LLC. All rights reserved. Opening Arguments is produced with the assistance of our editor, Brian Ziegenhagen, our transcriptionist, Heather Leverage, production assistant, Ashley Smith, and with the generous assistance of our volunteer unofficial researcher, Deborah Smith. Special thanks to Teresa Gomez, who runs our merch and our live shows and also heads up the OA Wiki project. Follow them at OA Wiki. And a big thank you to our Facebook group moderators, Emily Waters, Alicia Cook, Eric Brewer, Natalie Newell, Brian, and Teresa. Check out the Opening Arguments community on Facebook. And finally, thanks to Thomas Smith for creating the fabulous OA theme song, which is used with permission.